Let's hit it.
Zardoz! Zardoz!
Are we ever going to get a real theme song?
No, this is it.
With lyrics.
But
why would we have lyrics?
There's so many ways
it's
to
way
go.
Way too much work.
Marathon chat.
You had informed me that I had mispronounced Zardoz. Zardoz?
If you know how the movie ends,
just think of it this way.
It's pronounced that way.
No dose, not the way to go.
Zardoz.
You might need no dose to watch Zardoz. Dawes.
Bulldoze.
Dawes. This sounds like a grammar primer now, or a vocab
grammar primer. That's like the worst name for a band.
Grammar
ever.
Primer.
Grammar primer.
Grammar primer. Hi, Kevin.
Welcome.
We're back.
Marathon chat.
It's another marathon chat.
Last one before the marathon.
Oh, and it's a special interactive marathon chat.
Oh, that just sounds creepy.
It's okay. A special interactive marathon chat. Now I'm getting too William F. Buckley.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, you're not. You're not like...
And start... The marathon chat is going to be interactive.
Do I have to be... Oh, who is it?
Gore Vidal.
Gore Vidal.
Yeah, Prost.
I've seen Best of Frenemies or whatever that was called.
I still haven't seen it. I'd like to.
I don't understand. I mean, it's not a bad documentary. I don't understand how it got all the nominations. Because, I mean, it was just kind of a throwaway documentary, in my opinion.
There's a lot of documentaries like that today.
Yeah.
You know, where the, I mean, and it's a crapshoot because some of those subjects will be genuinely interesting in execution.
Yeah.
Because if you just pitch it like, hey, guess what? Gore Vidal and William Buckley did a TV show. Here's the story of it.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me is that, like, I haven't seen that, but I'm assuming it kind of sticks to standard documentary form of today, which is talking heads, picture, and you kind of rotate in on the picture. The picture, like, you know, the camera moves over the picture. The picture
they
comes
have
out
so
the
much
faux 3D
archive
and,
footage that
they
don't need to do that.
Yeah. Now all of you who tuned in to hear about William F. Buckley have gotten your jollies.
Yes.
So yeah, this weekend, will this podcast be heard before this weekend?
I hope so.
If you're listening to it and the marathon has already happened, well,
I will get to it. I promise.
Yeah. It's SF33, the 33rd annual Ohio 24-hour science fiction marathon. 33rd annual. 33. Amazing. This Saturday, March 5th, noon, till Sunday, March 5th, hopefully
Monday,
at noon.
March 6th, actually, probably.
6th, sorry. 5th to the 6th. Noon
from Saturday,
to
March
noon.
5th to Sunday, March 5th. We will... go through an entire year.
It's long. At the Drexel, 2254 East Main Street. And for those of you who have not been paying attention or who have had brain damage between the last marathon chat and this one, the highlights! The Midwest premiere of High Rise. Totally stoked for this one. Tom Hiddleston, Jeremy Irons, Elizabeth Moss, Sienna Miller. And this, sometimes premieres that we get tend to be a premiere, but maybe it's on VOD already, so it's more of a theatrical premiere. If you have an inclination to see High Rise or are excited to see it, this is the genuine Midwest premiere. We are getting this a week before it opens wide in England. We are getting this a month and a half before it opens on VOD and theatrically in the United States, so please take advantage. It looks like a lot of fun. We also have the Midwest premiere of Arrowhead, Australian Jekyll and Hyde in space thriller, and we are planning on having the director of Arrowhead, Jesse O'Brien, in for a Skype Q&A from Australia after that film. So yeah, we've done two Skype Q&As we've done in marathon history, both from a guy named O'Brien in Australia.
Wow.
How that happens, I don't know. And Kevin O'Brien is probably pretty
those Irish
jealous right
get
now.
Get everywhere, I
Irish
guess.
Irish in Australia, that's how we do it. So the Midwest premieres of High Rise and Arrowhead, our tribute to David Bowie with The Man Who Fell to Earth, Mad Max, and Mad Max Fury Road.
The Oscar-winning
Mad Max. The Oscar-winning, the seven-time Oscar-winning Mad Max
Fury Road.
Was it
seven?
I believe it was seven technical awards it got, yeah.
That's a lot.
The uncrowned best picture of 2015, Mad Max Fury Road.
Spotlight's a damn good movie.
If only more priests had molested children in Mad Max Fury Road.
If only there was more molestation.
Yeah.
And investigative reporting.
I actually like Spotlight a lot.
Spotlight's one of my favorite movies of 2015.
It was. I agree. I think that was a quietly great movie, and quietly in that it was that rare movie where the style is not the prominent part of the film, but the acting and
deliberately
the acting and the story are so strong that you don't notice like it's some kind of stylistic deficit.
Yeah.
So
and it had the advantage of being a molestation movie.
Well, there's that too, you know. That always...
Bill Cosby.
I don't want to say that always helps. That sounds terrible to say that. That always helps. We got Zardoz, Sean Connery, Zardoz, the Academy Award nominated Charlotte Rampling.
Why does it sound like we're yelling Zardoz during our vinegar strokes? Jeez.
Fantastic Voyage, which is the recent 4K DCP restoration of that. John Carpenter's Starman in 35mm. Destroy All Monsters with Godzilla, Mothra. Wait, is Mothra in Destroy All Monsters? I forget. No, not Mothra, sorry.
Way to go, Neff.
Oh, wait, no, Mothra's in Destroy All Monsters. What am I talking about? Ugh, anyway.
Wait, did you just call it Got Destroy Moment? This is like, I'm going to, it's this Godzilla sequel to I'm going to get you, sucker.
I'm a Destroy All
Monsters. Got to destroy them monsters.
I'm a Destroy All Monsters is what it's called, yeah.
I'm a Destroy All Monsters.
Starman and Destroy All Monsters.
I'm going to let you finish.
35mm. Jason X. The long-requested Jason X. The Friday the 13th Part 10 in Space. And, of course, Turkish Star Wars, which should be...
Our Turkish Delight.
Hoot. Our Turkish Delight, yeah. Well done. Well done. So that's the lineup. But we've talked about that already. So we're repeating a concept we did, I think, about a year ago. Was that the last time we did it for sci-fi?
I don't think we did this for horror.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Oh, I remember that.
No. It was a couple months ago. I was imbibing during the.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That one was.
Oh,
that
no,
was
no, 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 no. I mean, no. I'm sorry. What I meant was the last time we did an interactive podcast where we took questions from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that the last one we did was sci-fi last year?
Maybe.
I think. Okay. So basically, we threw the call out for questions from the audience that I could answer on the podcast. And like last time, I have not heard these questions beforehand. I am not being prepped.
Yes.
I can only hope that one of them is, why have you sold out so hard?
Not
or why
yet.
Are you a fraud?
Let's just start with this one. This comes from our good friend Tim Martin. Is it true Joe likes sitting in the back of the theater to hide his uncontrollable flatulence?
Yes. Next question. How about that? How do you answer that?
You're going to expound on it. That's awesome.
I sit in the back of the theater because I enjoy watching the back of everybody's heads because it gives me a sense of control, knowing I can see their reactions, and they can't see my reaction.
Pull the strings!
Well, yeah. I was always the guy who sat in the back of the room at school. When I was a teacher, I sat in the back of the room for meetings. Yeah. Well, and it gives you a good excuse if you want to duck out.
Mm.
If I'm particularly embarrassed of one of the films we show, I can just duck out, and no one sees me going, saying, Joe's leaving, what's going on?
This must be
a shitty film, boy.
He's leaving in the middle of Zardoz. How will he find out how it ends?
I would never leave in the middle of Zardoz, please. Please. Zardoz is a religious experience for me.
There we are.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah,
quality question.
Oh, no, there's six more.
Let's, Tim?
Let's do one. This is from Dale from Arizona.
Dale from Arizona, by the way, who is coming in with, I think his two sons and some friends. He's bringing a whole contingent from Arizona just to come to this event.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Well, his question is, for the longest time, things like Logan's Run and The Green Slime and a legal version of Dawn of the Dead were considered so-called white whales of the marathons. Somebody call me white whale.
Are you saying we're Captain Ahab?
Things you badly wanted to show, but for various reasons were unable to. Now that digital availability has, I'm assuming, opened up a large variety of options, are there any more white whales for the Columbus Marathon?
There is Kevin Carr.
And fuck you!
We're working hard to spear him, because once we do, finally... Now I'm imagining you as... you ever see the...
Naked?
There's that.
White whale, that's going to be... You know what? I have a great idea for a costume.
Do you ever... That would be blinding, spiritually blinding, mentally blinding.
Well, if you put a bright enough light on me, because I just reflect everything. I'm like a movie screen.
You have three sons. You can bring them along, and they can just shine lights on you.
If the screen ever gets damaged, you can just shine it on my belly.
That would be awesome. Do you ever see the Disney cartoon Willy the Whale about the singing whale?
No.
It's about a whale who can sing.
That's a very accurate title.
Three octaves, and he becomes an opera star.
Really?
Yeah, but this the guy who discovers him becomes obsessed with killing him because he thinks that he's swallowed three opera stars, or hopera stars, as he calls them in the cartoon. Now I'm imagining you as Willy the Whale. Yeah, it's kind of a sad cartoon.
Costume.
Poor Willy. Anyway, the white whales of the marathon. It is Wow. See, that's, Dale, you brought up a good point and a good word, and that is digital. That has changed a lot of things. Case in point, Dario Argento, your pal, Kevin, Dario Argento. What did I used to call him? The master of spaghetti horror? It was something catchier than that.
That sounds gross.
That sounded terrible. That doesn't
even sound appealing. Spaghetti horror?
That was an idea as it was coming through my brain into my mouth. I thought, this isn't going to come out right.
Yeah, hopefully not much has been coming in your mouth.
No, I hope not. Yeah. Tenebrae, which we showed at the Horror Marathon a few years ago. That could be something where a lot of Argento's earlier films were not available in very good versions on film. And digital changed that.
You mean quality. I mean,
quality. Image quality.
I thought you were talking about the quality of the film. It doesn't matter what you show it on.
See how I set you up for
that? It's still Argento.
It was beautiful. Tenebrae, we tried to get on film, but there's only one domestic film print available. And the quality of it is fairly good from what I've heard. But also, it's at the Academy Film Archive. And that's not the easiest house to get into unless you're a very, very prestigious museum or archive. Not that the Drexel has no prestige, but there are certain limitations. There are things, say, the Wexner Center can show, archival prints of films, that the Drexel can't always show.
Can't they say the Wexner Center and then just sneak it over to the Drexel?
That's how we've tried to do it, yeah.
It doesn't work that way? You have connections.
I have lots of connections, yeah. So Tenebrae, we couldn't get on film, but there was a fantastic Blu-ray that Arrow put out a few years ago, and we ended up taking that onto DCP, and it looked really nice. Mm-hmm. And that does give you more flexibility now. Well, talking about, what were the, not Dawn of the Dead, but the other two?
Green Slime and Logan's Run. Green Slime was a DVD, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Green Slime was weird because I think we've told the story before, but I'll tell it again for those of you who forget or just don't care. Green Slime by, I'm going to hell for forgetting the director's name. Can you look it up?
Yeah,
fairly renowned Japanese director. Kenji Fukasaku, is it? Well, for years, renowned...
Kenji Fukasaku.
Fukasaku, renowned world film institutions like the American Cinematheque tried to get a print of the Green Slime. Because they would do retrospectives of his career. Because he directed quite a broad range of films.
Yeah.
They couldn't even find it. And Green Slime, the only video it was on was PanScan VHS. So with that, you just couldn't get anything. Now, when Warner Archive released it on DVD, we knew that we could not get a widescreen print. I believe there are 16mm prints out there. I've never seen one. I know they show around sometimes, but I don't even know if I don't know if those 16mm prints are widescreen or if they're pan scan. A lot of 16mm prints are pan scan.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, you have to have a quality 16mm projector to show that, and that's very rare these days. Yeah. I think the Wexner Center might be the only institution in town that has a really high quality 16. And even
not the one that you found in classrooms around
not the
America.
Bell & Howell portable setup, no. Yeah. Well, and even that, I mean, that can be dicey. Back at Studio 35, we had a high-quality 16mm projector when I was still doing marathons there.
Yeah.
We showed the semi-legitimate Dawn of the Dead screening on 16mm on that, but that had a xenon bulb in it, too, and that could make 16 look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in fact, it might have been, I had heard stories over the years that was the 16mm projector or one of them from the Drexel North that they used to have.
Oh, okay.
But you need that because 16 looks kind of crappy on a screen if you don't have a high-quality projector.
Yeah.
So Green Slime, when the DVD finally came out, we said, look, why don't we test it out and see how it looks?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I have to have a certain caveat in this. I was not involved in sci-fi at that point like I am now. But behind the scenes, I was one of the persons who said, oh, yeah, let's give it a try. And that looked fairly good, you know. And Green Slime is a film that has a very bright primary color palette, and the transfer to DVD was very good. And showing it, considering we couldn't get anything else, you know, it was a good option. It's hard to think of a lot of films like that now. Logan's Run is another one, you know, where we finally discovered a film print. It just took forever to do. It's much harder to think of films right now that could be available. You know, if you're talking like London After Midnight, of course, that's a white whale, but no one has that. No one will ever have that. But I Dale has asked this of me before, I think.
Okay.
And I struggle to think of individual titles where we think, oh my God, we'll never be able to get that. Or we'll never be able to get that in a good format. Anymore, it seems like we almost work in reverse.
As long as it's on DVD or Blu-ray, it's viewable.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there are crappy DVDs out there you wouldn't want to show.
Triffids, you can't get a good DVD of
that. Day of the Triffids is a good example. Yeah, there is no good home video version of that right now.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, the last time I saw a 35mm print playing, it was at the Columbus Sci-Fi in 1998, and it was pink.
Oh, yeah. The one at
the Rife Center.
Rife, yeah.
So I don't know that Day of the Triffids is one we sit around saying, oh my God, if we could only get Day of the Triffids.
Yeah, Triffids.
And the internet has changed that too.
The internet?
The internet. Can I tell you about it?
Yeah. Oh.
It's a pretty fascinating concept.
Accidentally just kicked my dog.
A lot of computers connected to each other around the world. Hmm? I know. The internet has changed so much of that because the mythos that is built up around, say, watching the green slime in widescreen in a theater on a high-quality print, it gets lessened a bit if it's on DVD, but other things get lessened a bit if you can find them on YouTube in a decent copy. You know, it's not the same. You know, watching something in 360p on your laptop, not full screen, versus seeing it in a theater is way different. We almost look at it the opposite way now in that if we can find things that seem interesting that aren't on DVD or Blu-ray, The Keep, for example, when we showed that, or The Manitou 2 years ago at Horror. Those things, I think, aren't quite the white whales, but they are of high interest because it's something you can't just see.
Yeah.
Like the final quality of the film, put aside, The Satanist. The reason we booked that was because it was something no one had heard of before. Well, I know a few people out there will say, I heard of it. I saw it on a something weird videotape back in 1985.
Yeah.
But the general audience hadn't heard of it, and it wasn't on legit DVD video at the time. In fact, it's still not. I don't know why, because I heard that before we showed it, The Satanist had been sent to a video company to be scanned for a DVD Blu-ray release. Who knows? Maybe someone thought, oh, wait a minute, do we want to invest this much money in The Satanist?
Maybe they got it and said, ooh, cocoa butter.
Yeah. But I hope that explains it. I mean, It's like the DVD, Blu-ray, internet phenomenon in general. You know, 20 years ago, one of the biggest thrills I had in my life was pursuing uncut, again, Dario Argento, uncut versions of Argento films. Mm-hmm. And unless I had a Laserdisc player / multi-region Laserdisc player, you had to buy those on, you know, dubbed onto VHS, taped from a Japanese Laserdisc that had burn-in subtitles.
Yeah.
But the ability to see Deep Red uncut was cool. I mean, that the chase was great. Or getting the soundtracks, you know, looking for Goblin soundtracks from Argento films was, you know, oh, do you have a friend going to Italy? Can they pick one up for us? Or do you have, you know, and now that's so much easier. And it's nice, but it does take away some of that intensive hunt. I think the hunt that we have now is, here's a title we want to show. What's the highest quality version we can get, and how can we pursue that?
And when will it become available? Will they be releasing a Blu-ray of it or something like
Exactly, that? Yeah. Well, Starman. Starman's a case like that. We've never shown that. Mm-hmm. And when we found out we could get a 35mm print, we jumped on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a really cool thing. That is the original release format. And I have not seen the Blu-ray, so I can't comment on the quality of that. But that's something where if we couldn't get a 35 of Starman, we would have probably looked at the Blu-ray and we would have thought, well, weighed the two things. Do we want to just show it on Blu-ray, or is that something we want to wait and we know we'll be able to get it on 35 in the near future? Mm-hmm. I remember there was another white whale was Gokei Body Snatcher from Hell.
Yeah.
The print we showed at the Grandview in 2011 was
good.
Tim League's personal print. That's Tim League, who runs the Alamo Drafthouse Empire. And we were friends enough with them that they allowed us to borrow his print.
Yeah.
Which, trust me, when you're sitting there going like, hey, by the way, this is Tim League's personal print, so I hope this doesn't burn up or something.
Yeah.
That would be bad. But even that, I mean, Gokei Body Snatcher from Hell, Criterion released it on one of their Eclipse DVD collections like a year later.
Yeah.
So that's still cool to see, but it is harder these days.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. In that same, that was a long answer.
Well, we're only 20 minutes in.
That's another one from Tim. We're going to bounce back around on
all Tim's questions will be like, do you fart in the back?
35 millimeter. It's related to 35 millimeter. Is it true the marathon organizers have access to thousands of rare 35 millimeter prints of horror and sci-fi movies that have never shown at the marathons, but they keep on booking digital copies of movies that they have shown repeatedly at the marathons as a conspiracy to intentionally sabotage the event? Wow. There's a lot in that
question.
There's
a lot in
there's
that question.
A lot.
There's a lot. There are so many directions to go. Tim, you should know. There's never any conspiracy. It's all in your head, Tim.
Trust me.
They want you to believe there's a conspiracy, but Tim, we love you. Come back into the fold, Tim. Come back in from the cold. Come on. Come on, Tim. I'm trying to figure out where that question like went into Tim joke territory, and when it came out of that, and when it went back into Tim joke territory.
It did take a path. It was like playing Chutes and Ladders.
Okay, well, let me think how to answer this question.
Let me break
it down.
Because
there are some people... Oh, now I sound like Fox News. There are some out there who claim that... Yeah, Tim's not the only person who's posed a variation of this question. Mm-hmm. Because there are people who've come to this event for a long time, especially... who will say, why don't you show, say, this film in 35 millimeter that has never shown at the marathon because I like it a lot? Or, hey, you've never shown, or you've never shown. Last year, we got a little guff from several people, several veterans, because we showed Alien and Aliens again. Mm. They said, yeah, I feel like I've seen that already. So my answer to that line specifically is,
I've seen your face already.
Yeah, I try that first. Then they beat me viciously, and I cower, and then the white whale comes in and floats over. White floating whale.
Now I have a picture of a white whale, but somehow it looks like that hippo in Disney cartoons wearing the tutu.
I'm all for that. So the nature of the event and the somewhat peripatetic nature of the Columbus event.
That's a $5
where the fortunes of especially Columbus Sci-Fi have vacillated, oscillated, vibrated over the years. You should see the look.
Getting uncomfortable.
You see the look
here.
Kevin's giving to me right now. The nature of the event is if you go on long enough, you're going to get repeats of things that you like. Yeah. The Columbus crowd, especially because we started out at such a huge theater and then went to smaller theaters. And the crowd is, you know, like it or not, the crowd is smaller today than it was before. Mm-hmm. And one of the imperatives we have is trying to draw new people in, read younger people in. Yeah. And as part of that, you're going to get repeats over the years. That'll happen. Alien and Aliens, when some of the long-timers gave us guff for that, I said, you know, it's been exactly 19 years since we showed it, right? That's a long time. And we had a good chunk of new people who'd never seen either of those in a theater.
New people, not nude people.
Unfortunately, not nude people that I saw. I was kind of tired by the end, so I don't know if anyone is nude or not. We had, case in point, people staying till the end of the marathon.
Yeah.
Usually we always say, oh, we try to get about, you know, a third to half, if we're lucky, of people, of the attendance staying till the end.
Yeah.
And a lot of factors can go into that, like how far we're running over. Last year for Sci-Fi, Aliens was our final film. A lot of people have seen Aliens in this crowd. We had a bigger percentage of people stay for the entire event till the end for Sci-Fi to see Aliens, and we've had it years.
And that's even with an expired key.
Yeah, when we even went over. There is still a desire to see things like that. So there's that, for one. This is such a complicated question, I have to give it a multi-part answer. Especially today, with trying to split the difference between so many different types of audience members, the marathon veterans, the older people who will come in for the first time, the mid-range folks, the newbies, the recent additions, all those people, it's tough to try to split the difference between all of them. And the formula we've hit upon is, and who knows, maybe this formula is deeply flawed. Maybe we're totally missing the boat, but that it always helps to have at least one or two very recognizable films.
Mm-hmm.
And by very, I mean mainstream. There are people who will come to us and say like, oh, you're showing Zardoz, that's mainstream, everybody knows that.
No.
If you go on the street and say, Zardoz! I was on another podcast a month ago, and no one had seen Zardoz. And these are people who are, you know, in their 20s and 30s. And we showed them the trailer, and they're like, that's not a real film, is it? I said, yeah, it's a real film, honestly.
Well, honestly, I mean, I look at this list, and the most, really, the only ones that are mainstream are that you'd be mainstream recognized are the Mad Max movies and Jason X, and simply because of the hockey mask.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at this and say, if you had a casual fan of sci-fi, you're looking Mad Max, maybe Jason X, and maybe Fantastic Voyage. If you talk about Fantastic Voyage because of the imagery, it's been spoofed so many times. And I mean, your casual sci-fi fan might say, "Oh, Fantastic Voyage, I remember hearing about that."
Well, they'll see Turkish, and they'll be like, "Oh, Star Wars, I recognize that."
Yeah, there has been a move toward us trying to feature things that are a little bit more obscure, or at least having a decent representation each marathon.
Yeah,
that automatically opens it up to there's a lot of obscure stuff. Or there's a lot of stuff that hasn't shown, or there's a lot of stuff, especially on film, that people haven't seen in a while. So that opens it up to, well, why aren't you showing my obscurities? Or why aren't you showing these obscurities? And it, by the very nature, a lot of these obscurities, there are many, many more of them.
Yeah.
So that just gets tough in a certain ways to decide what to show. I always go back to the same thing about our programming philosophy, which is what it's been since the beginning. With a few variations, which is have a diverse slate of films, have a little something for everybody, try to get a few premieres / new films, try to get some obscure things, try to get things people will like. That's always nice. And I think one of the things we've tried to emphasize too is try to get a lineup, and how to figure this can be difficult. Try to get a lineup that looks good on paper, but also will play well.
There are
a lot of problems that can come in with that, because they're not all perfect. You know, seeing Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne at the horror marathon, our intent was not to play that at 4 a.m.
Well, no, I was going to say, and you actually, that dovetails into my thing I was going to say. You glossed over a facet of this. You always want to have one film that makes the audience turn on the event.
That's not my philosophy.
And Dr. Jekyll and Ms. Osborne, I believe, was one of them. Strange Color of Dying Bodies, Tears.
Wait. Now, if by turn for Dr. Jekyll...
Automaton.
If by turn for Dr. Jekyll, you mean sleep, then sure that. I will still dial back to you for Strange Color of Your Body's Tears. That was not Automatons. Automatons was the audience publicly deriding a movie. That did not happen during the Strange Color of Your Body's Tears.
No, that's true.
Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, also, we meant to show, I believe, at 11 o'clock, and we ran behind, and so it ended up showing much later than that. I know you like to get in your digs at Strange Color of Your Body's Tears. I'm gonna bring the filmmakers on the podcast sometime, and they will beat you within an inch of your life. And it's a man and a woman, so, you know, this is a truly...
Hey, different gender, for different folks.
A truly gender-diverse beatdown. That's what we aim for here.
White whale lives matter.
Yeah,
too,
white whale lives matter. That's a great tag. So yeah. Well, and you know, the nature of an event like this is one of the greatest things that we always talk about is that there are so many people from so many different backgrounds that come to this, and so many levels of experience. There are hardcore film fanatics, and there are people who just kind of dig movies and think the event's kind of cool and like sitting in a theater for a while, or like having an audience that's kind of fun to see films with. Everybody in that kind of gets a piece of the event when you really think about it. And years ago, I kind of learned this. I think back to Starship Troopers 2. This is my example I always use. In 2004, when the then Arena Grand sci-fi lineup was announced, it was announced that one of the films was the, I don't know even what it was, the Midwest premiere, the Midwest theatrical or something like that of Starship Troopers 2.
It was the Arena Grand premiere.
And I went on a mild, because I look back now at the actual post, and it's not that damning, but I went on a mild diatribe against Starship Troopers 2, saying, wow, this marathon lineup is almost great, but having Starship Troopers 2 in there makes it look a little cheaper. Now, unbeknownst to me, they were talking with Phil Tippett about coming in that year. Phil Tippett, who, you know, modern effects maestro who directed the film. But at the time, I didn't know that. But I even look back now and think, who cares? Mm-hmm. It's Starship Troopers 2. It was a premiere. People generally thought it was okay. You know, it didn't kill the event. And it, as years went by, and part of this is me going behind the scenes more and more often, it kind of taught me the lesson of, you have to look at these events in a very kind of, I always forget the word, but I'm going to say universalist point of view.
Okay.
In that, hey, guess what? There might be something I don't like. God knows there are movies that we've shown at the marathons over the years I have not liked. The Larry Blamire films, I have no patience for. Did I threaten not to go to the marathon because they were showing a Larry Blamire film? Nah, not really.
Which one was Larry Blamire's?
Lost Skeleton of Kadabra and Kadabra Part 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in Boston. They showed Trail of the Screaming Forehead. And, but I don't know. I think that sometimes we get some hardcore members of the audience or hardcore factions of the audience who are like, well, you're not showing enough obscure things. And it's like, well, we can't. You know, I would, one of my associates for a long time, I've joked around with him. I've said, I would love to sit here with you for an entire 24-hour Italian horror film marathon. It would be great, and it would be you and me and five other people.
Yeah.
Because we have to sell the event ultimately.
Well, there was talk, one particular, I say this in jest, but one particular longtime marathon goer, during one of the many leading up discussions of Jason X threatened to boycott if you showed
Jason
X.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if that's going to happen.
Well, he did dial that back and said, I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
He's from Cleveland, and he tends to be very,
he's a nice guy.
Crusty in a very adorable way.
Yes.
But online, it can come across as being,
adorably crusty.
As being very militant. I don't know why. Yeah.
But all right.
No, I mean, it's so those are the serious answers. The other answer, Tim, is probably, yeah, if you believe there's a conspiracy just because you're paranoid.
Just because you're paranoid.
I mean, they're not after you.
People are not out to get
so,
you.
Yeah, we have that conspiracy. Now, Tim, see what Tim is saying. What Tim is probably thinking back to is, why do you keep showing Suspiria when it sucks and no one likes it and it bombs
Suspiria.
Every time? Okay, Mad Max, case in point here. Mad Max, the original. Mm. Seems like something that, everybody's seen. The last time it showed was 20 years ago. And it doesn't get revived that much.
And it makes a great bookend with Mad Max Fury. Though they're sequel. Yeah. They're related, aren't they, in some way?
I think. Maybe. Doesn't... There's angry people in both films. I think.
Are you going to be giving away chrome sprays?
Oh, you mean Mad Max? Oh, I thought you meant Mad Max. Okay.
Oh.
I would love to spray my mouth with chrome right at the end and walk off, but I fear I'd die.
I could dress as Immortan Joe, I guess.
You would be a great Immortan Joe and scare all the women out of the audience.
All six of them.
Yeah, all six of them.
No, I will be here.
Does that answer the question, by the way?
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Love you.
Let's move on. This was a sub-question from Dale. I didn't notice it because it was another paragraph, but I think you actually already answered this. He goes, is there anything available only in the substandard format, such as DVD or Blu-ray, that isn't converted to a standard DCP you still want to show but refuse to show until you find a better format? Did we cover that? Or is there a real quick?
I'm sure there is. And off the top of my head, I can't think of any. But I know there are a few titles we've talked about over the years where we thought, let's
Black
wait.
Hole.
Black Hole. Black Hole, good example. Yeah, okay, the Black Hole. By the way, Tim's question also is, why hasn't Friday the 13th shown yet? That's kind of his main
just
talking
wait
list. I know. Well,
just wait.
Is there another Friday the
13th
question? Oh, good God.
Not specifically. Maybe.
The Black Hole. We have talked about showing Disney's The Black Hole for a good chunk of time. And we showed... Yeah, I know. That's
I like how he said he's going to show Disney, but we're going to show... I don't know. Anyone else's Black Hole might be a little... That might be a totally different movie.
I just set you up, don't I? Am I good or am I good?
You don't want to hear what I was going to actually originally say.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have wanted to show The Black Hole. To our knowledge, now again, emphasis on to our knowledge, the prints that we have seen, the 35mm prints, are fading to faded.
Yeah.
That's not saying that we would never show a faded 35mm print. Depending on the subject matter, depending on the time, depending on what it is. Night of a Thousand Cats, when we showed that, not a pristine 35mm print by any means.
Not
but
a pristine movie.
You're missing the point of the film if you're looking for a pristine 35mm copy of Night of a Thousand Cats. The Black Hole is something we get the feeling that people would like and would like to see. When we showed Something Wicked This Way Comes in 2012 at the Horror Marathon, we figured there are people like me and, I don't know, maybe you, or around our age who have some good high nostalgia factor for that film. So the print we found, which came from Disney, was in good shape. That print might have been struck within the last 5 to 10 years before then, too. The Black Hole, on the other hand, if we just have something that's faded, it might take away from some of what people really want to see about the film. And as of now...
I mean, the effects and the scope of it. It'd be like showing 2001 in a faded print.
Yeah, we showed Galaxy of Terror before in a print that was not exactly pristine colors. But again, it's Galaxy of Terror at 5 in the morning. It's not... That's not a film where all of a sudden you're going to say, I was robbed.
That the rapey booby scene was a little bit magenta.
Black Hole, for some reason, has only been released on a DVD that is okay on a widescreen TV, but would probably break up quite a bit if you threw it up on a big screen like the Drexel has. So we want to show Black Hole, and we are still efforting to try to find a better source for Black Hole. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
And there are probably others, but this will turn into an 8-hour podcast. Yes.
Well, since you anticipated this question, we'll go back to another one from Tim. Now that Jason X is showing at a marathon, can we expect to see more of the hockey mask wearing slasher at the horror marathon?
You mean Kevin Carr?
Well, only a hockey mask, okay. And that's it.
Okay.
And a diaper.
Here's the standard tack I take, because Tim has been bugging us for years about this.
Did we though answered a version of this, of why there haven't been the classic slasher movies in a recent chat.
What did we say? I forget.
Well, just go ahead and quickly, and I'll just interrupt you if you're treading familiar ground.
It's a tough balance to strike sometimes, mm-hmm. because you are organizing an event. You, as in me, as in, you know, well, you know, you do a little something like this for your family sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's that balance you strike between programming stuff that will play well with the event, but also you are programming the event. If you weren't, a robot could program the event. So part of it reflects what you want to put into it. We have always said, by the way, and Tim knows this, that if we could get a good 3D setup, we would show Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D in a heartbeat, because mm-hmm. that's a lot of fun. Sometimes, and this is personal, and people can poo-poo this if they want, and Tim will, sometimes I look at, say, Friday the 13th, and to me that film's okay. Nightmare on Elm Street, that's a great film.
Yeah.
That is a great slasher film, and we haven't shown that. So why don't we show Nightmare on Elm Street before we show Friday the 13th? So some of this might be mild bias towards some of the Friday the 13th stuff. Sure. Granted, there's that. I have never looked at the marathons, or at the horror marathons, as being deficient because we don't show Friday the 13th. Or haven't more often.
Yeah.
I do think you get into some of those 80s slasher films, and there's a very fine line between derivative and crappy and entertaining in a very low-rent way. My Bloody Valentine, I think, is a pretty entertaining film.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that skirts some of the low-rent aspects of things. Yeah. I think April Fool's Day is actually a really entertaining film, even though, you know, that some people hate it because of the ultimate revelations of what goes on.
Yeah.
But sometimes again, it gets into how are you assembling the lineup? And sometimes when we assemble the lineup, it's, okay, let's say we know we can get two good premieres. So those two are part of the equation. Then what's a film that's kind of big that people have wanted to see? Okay, now that's in that. And now we have two obscurities people have wanted to see, and now that's in that. And by the time we get to that, everything's filling up. Mm-hmm. I will freely admit, I don't think we've ever gone into marathon planning thinking, okay, time to build the lineup around Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
But we've never gone in saying, let's plan it around Nightmare on Elm Street either.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of happens that way. It's not a conspiracy.
You don't think
though.
That there's just a general anti-slasher bias? Because
that's why it was. I remember this question now. Is there an anti-slasher bias?
I'm just asking because, you know, sort of like how no black people were nominated for Oscars. That it might reveal something about the leanings.
The marathons are not anti-slasher in a traditional way. We're anti-slasher in a sorority way.
Yeah.
See, that's how it goes.
It's just not
like,
Kappa material.
You're just not Kappa material, Jason. Woof, woof. Now, strange color of your body's tears, come work your sexy magic on us.
Let's put all those in there.
I don't know. I mean, I do think...
Is there not enough 18-inch penis splacking around in these things?
I don't know. I it's tough too because you look at lack of slasher, but we showed like Demons 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and Demons is not an obscure Italian film. I mean, that's pretty beloved by horror fans of that ilk of that decade and that genre. Here's part of the challenge too.
I'm going to rephrase a question.
The challenge of trying, and this would be for sci-fi too, the challenge of trying, emphasis on trying, to program a little bit from all different eras. Mm-hmm. As time goes on, that gets way more difficult because you have more eras. Yeah. This marathon, for example, as a few people have pointed out, I think, is the first sci-fi marathon where we haven't programmed the black and white film to play.
Mm.
We almost did. We almost, and I'm not, I usually don't want to get into like, oh, well, let's tell them what they're not seeing. Mm. We almost programmed a black and white monster classic that has not shown at a marathon in quite a long time on DCP. Mm. But then we found out we could get Destroy All Monsters, which is on film, and we've never shown. And we haven't shown a Godzilla film in forever and a day.
Yeah.
So we decided, well, let's do Destroy All Monsters instead. And as a result, we don't have any black and white films in the lineup. that's not optimal, mm-hmm. but it just, it kind of happens that way. Horror.
Black and white lives matter.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Don't try to pull me into that. Now you're going to get me like all monsters matter or something. All monsters matter. Horror, when we were at Grandview, we had access to some archival 35mm prints from Universal. So that's why we showed Psycho, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Island of Lost Souls, stuff mm-hmm. like that. Last couple of years at Horror, we haven't programmed as much vintage black and white stuff just because there are other things we wanted to play, you know? I mean, and that's a tough balance to strike. Because all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, this horror, we have like a title from the 60s and we have something from the 70s and we have a couple from the 90s and we have a couple from here. What about the 80s? What do we do? And some Friday the 13th and slashers in general sometimes fall by the wayside.
Yeah, let me just rephrase a question on anti-slasher bias. It's not that do you and the organizers, but...
I am the organizers, Kevin. I contain all organizers. Much like El Topo contains all religions.
That sounds painful. Do you think that there are, and I know we're talking about the horror marathon at this point, really, more than anything else.
Coming this fall, October 15th and 16th to the Drexel.
Because there's not, I mean, aside from Jason X and, you know, like maybe one or two more that you could maybe think of, slasher genres are going to fit in the horror marathon. But do you think that the marathon goers, some of the marathon goers might just generally be like, well, that there's a certain anti-slasher bias to the crowd that they would think it would cheapen the event and that might affect audience.
Okay, here's anecdotally what I know. And it seems to have passed the last time we did a horror survey, a survey of the horror marathon crowd was about 4 years ago. We asked about the composition of the film lineup and is there anything you don't want to see or is there anything you really want to see? Mm-hmm. We have never had a strong outpouring of support for more slasher films. We have also never had a strong reaction against more slasher films.
Aside from the 15 cards that were written in the same handwriting.
Yeah, who could that be?
With a little ghost at the bottom.
The ghost at the bottom, yeah. No, I mean, there's individual people here and there, but we've never had a strong push of people saying, why don't you show more slasher films? The marathon is bad without them, or the marathon would be better without them. And we've never had a strong push from people saying, never show slasher films.
Okay.
It just happens. Well, horror this year, this last year, we showed Night of the Creeps.
Yeah.
Very 80s film in a lot of ways. And, you know, to me, Night of the Creeps is a better film than Friday the 13th. If you had to put those back
to back.
It's
also not really a slasher movie.
No. But I mean, but as an 80s film, that's the thing. You try not, if you can, to overload too much on one decade if you don't have to.
Except for the 80s, because the 80s were awesome.
Nothing happened after the 80s. The 80s happened, and culture sucked afterwards.
Yes.
And I think we've been learning that lesson now for a decade.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Right. This comes from Andy Aaron.
Wow, new guy. I know that name.
What is the final week heading into a marathon like at Marathon HQ?
Torture.
I will just whores and cocaine. That is all
and
it
whores
is.
And cocaine.
We could take all the money from the ticket sales already.
Usually it's
whores and cocaine. We go discount.
It starts with the coke, then it goes to the whores, and then the torture follows that. And then,
That's your side of Marathon HQ. No.
Well,
did you notice how I insinuated myself into Marathon HQ in this scenario?
You do visit quite a bit. We have to kick you out at night when you're drunk and naked and
just wait
all
for
sorts
the
of other bad things.
Where are the whores? They're coming, Kevin.
Official marathon whores coming soon. What is the week of
horror marathon? Marathon.
What is the week of the marathon like? We're in there. I mean, we're recording right now.
So apparently, you have nothing to do.
I have nothing else to do. I've been sitting here for a couple days now, just shooting the breeze with Kevin, Most of the time, in recent years, most of the time, it's been okay, believe it or not. Well, one thing we got smart about, and this especially took shape when Bruce and I teamed up many years ago, and we started splitting more of the duties, is we tend to try to take care of some of the biggest things in advance.
Is a good project management strategy.
I believe it or not.
I know people who do project management for a living. They would approve of it.
I had this certain romantic notion years and years ago about decoration setup for the marathon. Because I had heard stories that a lot of times people would set up the decorations the night before after the theater closed, so it was a total surprise to people the next morning what was going to happen, what decorations were up. And I maintained that for a long time, and I was like, I don't want people to see too much in advance because it ruins the surprise. Nah. And we got this real romantic notion about staying till 2 a.m. in the morning on Friday night. And then we get up and be really tired, and it's like, oh, this is great. I gave that up several years ago because finally someone banged it into my head saying, this is dumb. Why don't we just come in on Thursday, set up most of the decorations then, and then fill in the blanks over the next 2 days if we have to.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done, and it's made things a lot more pleasurable, trust me, because Friday night is, hey, go kick back with your friends, as opposed to, no, friends coming in from out of town. I have to decorate tonight because I have to preserve I have to preserve the purity.
It's like a bride on her wedding day. You can't see her.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I held on to a lot of those dumb traditions for
a while. You were an idiot when you were younger.
I was. And I was into my 30s when I kept doing that. Well, and I mean, I understand in a vacuum, the idealism of that.
You cling to things.
Yeah, I know I do.
You're
know.
Like a raccoon
like
with
your
something
bosom
shiny.
Most times.
I don't have much of a bosom for a fat guy. I do not have tits.
No, actually, you're right.
I don't have much tits. My man boobs aren't there.
Very unimpressive, Kevin.
I'm sorry.
So, okay, Andy, back on topic. So, like, you know, decorations.
This is exactly what Marathon HQ is like.
It's zany fun 24 hours a day here on Marathon HQ. Hey. Andy, so like on Thursdays, we've been going in to do the bulk of the decorations. Usually the week of, the t-shirts and the mugs come in, so we have to just make sure those get in. Last year for horror, we had a fuck up with the mugs where what we sent the company, there were problems with translating it to the mug. And so like this was just over a week beforehand, we were still struggling.
You're looking to go, Phi Psi 32? What is that about?
It was horror. It was the horror marathon. They turned out fine, actually. But the Monday of, we were still negotiating on how to fix the problem. That, you know, little blips like that can be kind of a pain. What else goes into the standard week of? And I should really say, like, the week of now. Because it's how things have been operating. First of all, big, big credit to the Drexel, because we generally know going into the week of and into the day of that, oh, they have the operations of the theater in hand. Things are fine. Yeah. We can show up Saturday morning and things will be open.
It'll be working.
And the week of, a lot of times we end up having to do some mild maintenance of the 35mm projector just to make sure everything's okay with that. And sometimes it can take until the week of to get a final check over just because we have to bring a technician in from out of town. A lot of the week of is picking things up. Bruce and I, the way we've split things the last couple years, he's done the programs for Sci-Fi. That was weird. That was like a mini stroke there. Whoa.
What was that?
the signals got crossed in my head. He's done the programs for Sci-Fi. I've done the programs for horror. And inevitably, I end up waiting until like the weekend before the week of to make the programs because information can change. Films can change. So I end up doing that and then submitting it and then picking them up a day or so later. That takes a little bit of work. Mostly throughout the week of, it's cleaning up. You know, this week I still have to go and search out a few more things for the decorations. That'll take a little time tomorrow. When we go into leading up to it, you know, like I said, decorations take place on Thursday. By that point, we have most of the stuff in. The bulk of our prizes from Epic Loot don't actually come in until Saturday morning because those guys are coming in with them from Dayton.
Yeah.
So morning of, we have to get there. Usually we get there by between 9 and 9:30. Finish setting up what we couldn't set up before. Get the prizes in. Set up the t-shirt table. Set up the ticket table. The cool thing the last several years, the Friday night before, like I said, I've been able to just say, hey, if there's like a big emergency, let us know. But I'm going to kick back, hang out with my friends, and get home early and get a good night's sleep. It works wonders sometimes. But I'm trying to think of anything else. I'm trying to think of anything else the week of that traditionally has been weird. Some of it just has depended over the years on sometimes the film's getting there. There have been cases in the past where that's been real touch and go, depending on the theater, depending on the film, depending on where the film's coming from. Although that hasn't been a problem for a while. It's it's become kind of pedestrian. Again, I think that there's a romanticism about the let's load up the last week with tons and tons of stuff to do because, you know, that's fun, but it's also kind of flawed.
And it's exhausting.
Yeah, and when you minimize the things that you have to do the week of,
yeah,
then you're fine. I hope that answers the question, Andy. I know you were looking for a sexier answer. But
I was... Whores
and coke and torture, basically.
I was tweaking things along the way. Myself.
Yes. Yeah, true.
It happens. That was sexy. All right. Another question from Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Now that the restrooms are right off the main lobby, is there a concern that the various sounds and smells could affect concession sales?
I hope not. I'm going to put...
They're pretty well isolated.
Okay, by the way, for those of you who don't know, the Drexel has new bathrooms. They are stellar. They are amazing. I worked at the Drexel 20 years ago. If you had told me 20 years ago that one of the nicest parts of the theater would be the bathrooms, I would have laughed. Yeah. These things are phenomenal. Have you been in them?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like walking in and I feel like I should be about to be murdered by a gangster in 1927 Chicago.
That's
they have
a good
this
way, yeah.
Excellent retro white brick wall veneer look.
Sort of like the beginning of Casino Royale.
Yeah. The toilets themselves. You don't have to actually touch them to flush them.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, you used to have to, like, caress them.
Yes, you used to have to convince
whisper
them.
Whisper in their ears.
The lighting is nice.
Please flush my wee.
That's a very Tim question, by the way. Thank you, Tim. Yeah. I have not been in the Drexel for a long-term event with the new bathrooms yet. I'm going to assume that the architects and the planners had enough wherewithal and foresight to think, oh, we probably don't want any kind of weird, you know, sent from the bathrooms getting to the concession stand.
Okay, Tim, I'm going to speak to you directly now. If your sounds and smells in the new bathroom affect concession sales, you need to seriously think about changing your diet.
Well put.
Because the bathrooms are there, and then there's the sink, and then there's kind of like a little teeny lobby-ish area.
Yeah.
And then there's an entrance area, there's a considerable amount of space before you get to the concession, so I think you're going to be fine. And if it's causing a problem, then you might want to get yourself checked out.
Yeah.
Toot sweet.
The only problem I could think of is the line to the bathroom will now snake into the lobby, but it snaked into the lobby beforehand anyway.
Yeah, well, and they also have this little enclave, this little foyer.
It's just moving the potential line for the bathroom. Yeah, the foyer is nice. Has a big mirror. Has the old big mirror from that wall.
Yeah.
And a bench. And yeah, they're super. I'm very much looking forward to using the bathroom now. No knock on the old bathrooms, but I think the Drexel will be the first ones to say the old bathrooms are getting a little decrepit after a while.
Yeah.
And when you want to use the facilities at 3 a.m, you're dealing with a lot of wear and tear that's gone on along the ways. These, I get the feeling the wear and tear will be much, much lesser.
Yes, please don't wear and tear the bathrooms.
Yeah, please be careful with them. They're nice and new and shiny.
All right, next question from Andy. Will Shockorama return for another year this summer? Any thoughts on other all-night events throughout the year? That's a good question.
The Shockorama. For those of you who don't know what the Shockorama was, last August to try to have a kickoff event for the horror marathon. End of August, we did a three-film, a triple feature horror bill event, and we showed Day of the Dead, the George Romero original on 35mm. We showed Vampire Hookers. The classic on 35mm.
What was the name it was shown under?
Vampire Hookers was shown. The print, the name on the print was... I forget what the name of the print was. You must remember, maybe. You brought it up.
I was asking. I knew it was something
different. It
was not
Vampire Hookers on the print.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a 35 print of David Cronenberg's Shivers, a.k.a. They Came From Within, which Kevin gives me a lot of crap about because we promote it by the American name that it was released under for decades.
But anytime you see it anywhere else, like on Amazon or Netflix, it's...
Can't please everybody. Shivers. So we had three 35mm films. We debuted the lineup for the horror marathon. We had video trailers for all of the films. And to pique everybody's interest, we showed a ton of trailers. And then we also showed, we sold special one-night-only discount horror marathon tickets. I think we took $3 off the top of the cost if you wanted to buy them that night only.
I think I bought mine that night.
I think you did. Generally well-received. The attendance was okay. And that's one of the reasons why we might hedge a bit on doing it this year again or not. That's the thing is, it's weird, but doing a 24-hour event is almost easier to make your money back on than doing a 3 to 6 to 7 film event, because you know you'll get a pretty good crowd for the 24-hour, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of odd in some ways, because, you know, I would think normal person, if they say, oh, cool, there's an event starting at 11 o'clock and it might run for 4 or 5 hours or so, sure, I'll go to that, and it's only $10. Sure, I'll go to that. Whereas someone saying, like, you know, the Full Strength Marathon, they might look at that and say, that's a big commitment. Not that I'm bad-mouthing the Full Strength Marathon.
Yeah.
But sometimes we struggle a little bit more to do a triple feature, say, for various reasons, I guess. Maybe part of that is because end of August. And again, not to say Chakarama was like some kind of flop. It was actually, you know, we probably broke even on it. And we had a good crowd. It felt like a good crowd. Mm-hmm. We would love to do more events like that. We would love, God, we've talked for years about maybe doing another variation on the old schlock around the clock, the B exploitation. Cool. You know,
we're going to show porno trailers during
Yeah, sure. Those weren't mine. Yeah, I was like 2 when that event went on. Come on.
That's disgusting.
Please. It's a matter of people wanting to support them. We have had a little bit of limited success over the years doing other events. Granted, 1 or 2 of those might have been pretty bad in general. I'm not saying it was the Rockpocalypse, and I'm not saying it was. I'm the Cuckoo Patrol. I'm not the person to talk to about that. Yeah, we would love to do that. And I would not rule out doing Chakarama again. We haven't talked about it yet because a lot of moving parts with that. But we would love to do more events with the Drexel like that. It does take work. It does take time. We're a small crew. And it does take money. So, as in to pay the bills for the event.
Yeah.
So, let's see. How about that?
Okay.
I think we have existed in a perpetual state for years of wanting to do more things like that. Yeah. It's just being able to do them in a way that makes sense financially, logistically.
And marketable to the crowd.
Marketable to the crowd. That also happens, too.
Well, this is actually a relatively legitimate question from Tim.
Hey!
That does kind of dovetail into this kind of question of if you would do something else.
By the way, the real question is, there is a conspiracy, Tim. And the conspiracy is to keep me in the back of the theater because they won't let me in the bathrooms because my flatulence is so bad. Yeah.
All right. Will the new seats be installed before the horror marathon?
That's the plan.
Okay.
Yeah, some of you don't know this, but
right. And will that affect whether that might also be a contingency on Chakarama?
Currently, there are 12 new seats installed in the main house at the Drexel. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, we're not separating them. When I get there with my crew in the morning before everything opens, some of them might want to sit in them, so who knows how many will be available. But you can see what are planned as of right now to be the new seats for the Drexel in general. Mm-hmm. The last that
I approve of them. I've seen them.
Kevin has sat in them. Yeah. I've sat in them. They are comfortable. They are bigger. Everything we've heard is the plan is to have them installed before the horror marathon, mm-hmm. and to have them installed, you know, probably by early summer, I'd say, if not before. But I'm not aware of the updated timeline right now.
Okay.
How will that affect things? It will cut down on the seating capacity. That we know. I think we're losing about 20 seats.
Yeah, well, I talked to Kevin Rao at the Drexel, and he didn't seem he said they're losing seats, but it's not like an obscene number. It's not like when the Marcus or the Dublin 18.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They went from tiny little seats to the Dream Loungers, and you cut the house size in half.
No, these aren't the leather lounger chairs. No, these are akin to what you'd see at maybe the Gateway or the old Arena Grand or something.
Yeah. Before they put in the
before they put in the
desk chairs.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll cut down on seating. We'll figure something around that. You never like, I mean, we're at the point now, we never like to lose seating for the marathon because we always have the hopes of growing beyond what we have. Now, you know, it is very true. If the demand was overwhelming for the marathon, I don't know, maybe we could go to the Drexel and say, hey, let's have it on 2 screens. Many people don't know this, but the Boston Sci-Fi Marathon, our sister / mother marathon, depending, I'm your sister and your mother.
The Chinatown marathon.
Forget about it, Jake, it's a marathon. the marathon from whence we came, the Boston Sci-Fi, started out at the Orson Welles Cinema back in 1976, I think it was. the Orson Welles Cinema was a three-screen theater. And famously, the marathon went on in House 1 and House 2. And then sometimes they would do a night flight, an all-night reduction in House 3 downstairs. But regularly, they sold out both houses. And well, each house would form their own personality as a result.
Well, and one of those marathons in the mid-2000s, they did a night flight one at the Drexel,
I think. There was an attempt, yeah. The problem with that was there have been two attempts at a night flight over the years. One was at my first ever sci-fi marathon, 1993. That marathon had almost sold out. And that's when they promoted, we'll do a night flight too at the Drexel across town. It turned out that there were so few tickets sold that they offered to take the people up to the Drexel North because people would have left by then and just let them go into that one for the rest of the marathon.
Yeah.
The problem with the night flight at the Drexel Bexley, the one we're at now, I think that was maybe the Patricia Neal year, possibly, or the year after.
That's possible.
Maybe the Buckaroo Banzai year. Yeah. The problem is the tickets went on sale for that right when the tickets for the regular event went on sale. Mm-hmm. And the idea was test it out to see if there are people who only want to stay for the first seven film or for like six of the films. And from my memory, people bought tickets for that and they came in and they watched maybe the first couple films. I thought that after a few films, they were given the option to just go in the regular theater and finish watching the regular marathon.
Oh, okay.
I thought that's what they ended up doing. It's hard to get, so far it has been hard to get a big interest for a pure night flight for one reason or another.
Is a night flight, it's just reduced. It has like fewer features.
Yeah, you'd get, the plan for both was show six of the films.
Okay. What about this? I'm just spitballing
sure.
here.
Yeah.
I usually do this to you before we actually record. What if you did one and you said you did House 1 and 2
mm-hmm.
in the Drexel, because 2 is the theater on the screen, the room on the right.
Uh-huh.
And you said for the main house, House 1 is respectful, full-blown marathon. House 2 is your talk and text theater, where you can goof on the movies and pull out your phones and do whatever the hell you want.
That's actually how the Boston Marathon, from my understanding, evolved.
Yeah.
In that I think it was Cinema 2 was the one where people were a little more raucous.
Well, but I mean, not just...
But you're talking...
Just
see, that's a thing.
Declaring
though.
It.
You're talking about, especially when you get into being on your phones, you're getting into it. That's a little bit more of a seismic shift in what you would allow the audience to do for that. Because yakking on the films and being on your phone the whole time are two different things in some people's mind.
Yeah.
I don't...
Well, I think you kind of do one as, you know, like no rules. Well, I mean, you can't be...
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be snorting cocaine off a hooker's ass in the front row. Or do you?
I know some of those guys who sit in the front row.
That would be a good concession thing to have.
There you go.
Maybe hookers and cocaine. Anyways, no, this stems off a conversation I had once with an editor of one of the film sites that I've written for. It was back a couple years ago when NATO, not the North Atlantic Treaty.
Back when the North American Treaty was signed.
No, not the treaty organization, the National
Association of Theater Owners. Yeah.
They came out and they said, we're thinking about allowing texting in movie theaters. And people went batshit crazy over it. And I actually said, I hate texting in theaters. And generally, if you've ever heard somebody yell at somebody in a theater in town, especially if it's a pre-screening or at one of the Drexel marathons, that's usually me yelling.
Yeah.
About that.
I just pick up their phone and crush it in my hands and glare at them.
Yeah, that also works. It hurts sometimes. My joints aren't what
they
used to.
Not me, man.
Not you,
because
you're fit. So, I actually went against grain, and actually I was silenced by my editor. I wanted to write an article about this. I was not allowed. And I said, no.
Censorship!
I know. Because and his thing is like, we can't have any sort of acceptance of this idea. I mean, talk about what's funny, you know, free speech until it's not what you want to say. So, but my point was, I said, yes, sell tickets to places where you're allowed to text, because then there's a rule. You text in this theater, not that theater. You talk in this theater, not that theater. And then if you delineate it, the obnoxious, crazy people and the hipsters who want to make, like The Witch, I don't know if you've heard the stories of The Witch.
Oh,
there's horror stories about people going to the theaters and people talking and texting because they're bored, because it's a long, deliberate, well, it's not that long, it's like 90 minutes, but it's a slow, deliberate movie and spoken in old English. So people aren't, you know, it's a challenging movie for some, and then people are giggling and guffawing and checking their phone and talking through the whole movie. throw all them in another theater. And if it doesn't bother you, go to that theater, but make the other one the more respectful theater. And if you delineate that, then you at least have, you can't have your phone out during this. Go to the other theater.
There are several levels to this. One is we would have to get to the level where we have a lot of more people right now coming to the event to even have that as an option. Because if we don't, all of a sudden we risk...
Night flight, hipsters welcome.
We risk... Yeah, there you go. Well, we risk splitting the audience down the middle. Two, for the most part, you know this. You always end up sitting by somebody who's not like this. But for the most part, the audience we get is cool.
There's always somebody I have to yell at.
There's one person by Kevin that picks him out and says, I'm going to sit here and text now, right in front of Kevin Carr and his sons, because I hate them. Maybe they just don't like you. Maybe they listen to the podcast and they're like, jerk.
Yeah, I did have somebody complain that I stood up too many times during the hardware.
Ooh, stand up too many times. Hey, he may have been right.
I kept having to. Well, because there's reasons for it, but I apologize. I'm sorry.
Control your bladder!
It's because I got kids. I had a friend over for the horror marathon. I had to go out and do radio calls.
Yeah.
I should have sat in the back where no one would hear my flatulence.
No, you shouldn't have. Yeah, I agree. Yes. I mean, yes, you should have. I agree. What am I talking about? We'd have to have a lot more people. We'd have to have an interest in doing that, too. I don't know. You know, to me, it's... Maybe I'm just really old school in that sense. I think there are certain...
You're of the mindset don't allow people to have that option.
No, I think there are certain standards you should set. And you should say, look, you're coming to a theater. There's a lot of other people around here, around you. Have a little respect for them, you know? Just turn your fucking phone off. Or don't...
I think you should use those exact words.
Turn your fucking phone off?
Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of the movies.
Yeah.
Is it is a completely group experience. It is, in modern times, it is one of the few... transcendent group experiences we have left where a lot of people from so many different areas will come together and they might not even know each other, but they'll all laugh together at a comedy. They'll all cry at a sad movie or, you know, scream at a scary film, you know, films, concerts, plays. And I really think that there is, you have to set a line at some point to say, look, do whatever you want on your own time, but you're with a bunch of other people right now. Just be cool. And plus, it's a couple hours. Right. Deal with it, you know.
Well, marathon's 24. But.
It's like only a couple hours in our heads.
That's true.
Any other questions, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, we got a couple more.
Oh, God, there's more.
From Andy, who designs t-shirts and mugs each year?
Well, when they're bad, it's Bruce, and when they're good, it's me.
See, good there answer. You go. That was the most political answer I've ever heard.
it changes. Let's see. Horror marathon last. Let's see, Shock Around the Clock, from Shock Around the Clock number 3 until now, I've designed the t-shirts, and I've also designed the mugs. Mm. Bruce designed the t-shirt for Shock Around the Clock number 2. Mm. A graphic designer friend of his designed the shirt for number 1. Sci-fi the last 2 years, I think a separate graphic designer friend of his has designed the t-shirts. Before then, Bruce mostly designed the t-shirts. This year, and the mugs. Mm. Last year, I designed the mug. Graphic designer guy designed the t-shirt. This year, I designed the t-shirt. So if you hate the t-shirt this year, please, by all means, come bitch at me.
Yes.
Bruce designed the mug. So if you hate the mug this year, by all means, bitch at Bruce.
So basically what you're saying, let's distill this down. If you can't snooker somebody else into doing it, it's either you or Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
Graphic designer graphic guy. Sounds like a Simpson comic book guy. You know?
We generally have kind of had a delineation of responsibilities where he generally pulls a little bit more weight for sci-fi. Mm. And I've tended to pull a little bit more weight for horror. So for horror now for several years, I've designed the t-shirt, the mug, the program, the flyer. Sci-fi last 2 years, I've done the flyer. First time in a long time that someone other than Bruce hasn't done the flyer. In a lot of ways, for time purposes, I've ended up doing it.
Sure. Do you have old files that you just redo, or you don't do them all from scratch, dude?
Oh, God, no.
Because this looks, I mean, and it's not a complaint, but this looks very similar to last year's flyer. Well, so it looks like you may have.
They both are green, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I have a copy of last year's flyer in the car to show you how they're not completely similar.
I'm just saying, but it looks like why reinvent the wheel, for crying out loud?
Yeah, well, I think Bruce still does cut and paste for what he does. I switched over to Microsoft Publisher Yeah, I know. Laugh it up. back in 2011, which makes it infinitely easier and more malleable. So yeah, I hang on to the old files. If you look at the flyer from this year, it just happens to be green like last year's were. The back has somewhat of the same design. Just for clarity's sake, Kevin Carr, the front of last year's flyer had the film titles spelled out just in regular font. This one has all the film titles in their original
That's not a complaint.
It does. Now, it does at the bottom. The whole the slug about plus, more premieres, costume contest, all that. Yeah, I basically took that from last year's flyer and altered it just a bit for this year.
Just asking. Good God.
We are always original, Kevin. So always. Never derivative.
Sensitive.
So, yeah, I hope that helps, Andy, in some ways. I'll tell you what. At the marathon, if there's one thing you really don't like, come up to us and say, hey, man, who designed this T-shirt? And then I'll say, well, Bruce did. And then I'll run away.
So basically, for all of this, you're just Johannes Factotum through this whole process.
I am the Jonas Factotum, yeah.
Yes. Johannes.
It sounds better when you say Jonas. They called me Johannes Factotum.
Are you one of the Jonas Brothers? Okay, next question from Tim. Back to, these are more serious ones.
I can
several years ago, Bruce attempted to show the, this is like decades ago. Several years ago, Bruce attempted to show the 80s sci-fi classic Battle Beyond the Stars, but the pin, but the print burst into flames.
That was 26 years or 23 years ago. That was my first marathon.
That was a while ago.
Oh, God.
Any chance this movie could be revisited in 2017? Well, apparently if it's that print, only part of it can definitely be revisited.
We still have that print. We're waiting to rehab it. Yeah.
You're going to blow it up on a Nazi general
somewhere. I'm sure Battle Beyond the Stars would be fun. It's just a matter of locating a good version and if it fits and what we want to do.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to see it because I've never seen the end of the film. That's the only time I've ever watched it. And
I saw it when
the last 15 minutes.
I saw it when it came out in theaters, but
yeah,
couldn't tell you what happens.
No, it's a fun film.
This comes from Dale.
I'm glad Tim remembers that. Yeah. As old as he is, I'm glad he remembers 1993.
You know, you gotta have brain.
That's all he remembers anymore.
This is from Dale.
Hi, Dale.
Do you ever have a problem with personal bias getting in the way of booking a marathon? I should have asked this earlier.
All the time.
He gives some really good examples, and I could almost answer these. For example, the marathon has a rich history of expressing our love for James Cameron, yet, has Avatar ever been considered? It is the second highest grossing movie. No, it's the highest grossing movie of all time.
Yeah.
Yet I feel the community around the marathons would probably be against it showing because of the hipster side of history is to be anti-Avatar. Can I actually specifically address Avatar? What my question?
Go right ahead.
My suggestion would
be. Go right ahead.
Avatar's from 2009. That's not very long ago.
No.
And it did get played quite a bit, and I think there was a lot of Avatar fatigue shortly after it. And
it's long.
Well, and the way to show Avatar is in 3D, and there hasn't really been an option for that.
Very much so, yeah.
Would that specifically answer the Avatar question?
Okay, for Avatar alone,
yeah.
Let's be clear about a few things.
Okay.
I was not that impressed by Avatar
on
a personal level. I think now looking back, and I say this as someone who liked Titanic a lot when it came out, I think James Cameron has devolved as a filmmaker in just about every way post T2, and you could argue before T2. I just went back and watched T2 not that long ago. Still holds up in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't find him as interesting anymore. I think there's a lot of Lucas inside him where it's the fascination with the technology has obscured what he did really, really well for a long time, which was take these big budget, massive things, but tell them in a way where they're spectacle, but there's real humanity. And I think he's kind of gotten caught up in that. That's my personal bias right there.
Okay.
Does that mean I would say we will never show Avatar at a marathon? No, because that's like, you know, Friday the 13th, I'm not a huge fan of. Would I ever say we'll never show it? No, of course not. I do think it is harder these days. I don't know why I just put my finger on the table, because this means I mean business.
I know, right? This is an election year.
That's why I'm not president. I haven't done the half thumb.
I did not have sex with Avatar.
Not yet.
Ms. Lewinsky.
Wow. Boy, a lot of thoughts. A lot of ideas. It is harder these days, I think, to show newer films that are bigger because they are all over the place.
Yeah.
They are so big. Showing Mad Max Fury Road this year, it wasn't like we came into the planning process saying, we're going to show Mad Max Fury Road and there we go. This is the exception in a lot of ways. Yeah. If you notice, a lot of the newer films we've shown over the years that aren't premieres are things that are either have been underscreened or that were favorites that were kind of like in between. It Follows, I think, is a good example from last year. That wasn't Your Next the year before. A lot of people hadn't seen it.
Yeah, Your Next is a great
It Follows, like a lot of the genre fans had seen it. You know, I'll admit for that, I thought, oh, this is a really good film and it's something recent and we can get it. And I think, to me, it was like, I think this might be fun to see again with an audience, especially because for some reason or another, there's a divisive aspect to that film. But that It Follows was also not Avatar. It Follows was not the biggest grossing film of the year. I mean, it was in Columbus, it showed in two theaters.
In 6 or 7 years, you're probably not going to be showing Star Wars The Force Awakens either.
Yeah, because
it's unlikely.
And in some ways, it's the media environment that these films spring up into. Yeah. And that if they're really, really huge in theaters, it's media saturation. And then after that, when they hit video, it's everywhere. And that's different than, like, say, when Terminator 2 showed in 1994, because it had been out in theaters a couple years before. It was on video, but it wasn't as easy to see in a really nice form.
Yeah. Because even then, you just had VHS and it was pan and scan.
I do think there's
or Letterboxd, so it was half the screen.
I do think, at least on my part, there's been a reluctance to rely on things like that immediately.
Well, you know what the last film that I would actually throw out that was like this?
What's that?
Iron Man.
Oh yeah,
in 2010 or 11.
Yeah,
because even like when you showed Pitch Black 1 year, not you, but the marathon showed Pitch Black, that one was still kind of an underseen film.
Pitch Black was not a huge success in theaters.
Yeah. But Iron Man, can I
give you behind the scenes?
Sure.
Iron Man and Source Code, 2 years in a row.
Source Code was underseen. Source Code was a little more obscure.
Well, they both hold true for this, but Iron Man even more so. Iron Man was Jeff Frank's call to show.
Okay.
And I say that in a completely agnostic way, but whether you liked that screenie or whether you didn't like it, Iron Man was his call.
It was programmed at a good time because you can go to sleep.
Ended up being that way. Star Wars the year before, I believe it was. Mm. Or not Star Trek.
I was about to say.
Yeah, the Trekkies just had a collective aneurysm out there. Draggers. Star Trek, the Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah.
That was
Jeff Caldwell. There's another one that would, yeah. But I mean, they're generally not, usually it's like Dread. Dread was one, but it was very underseen. It wasn't saturated.
I think it's a weird case because part of the history of the marathon is now that Star Trek, Abrams Star Trek, went over really, really well with that crowd.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much that means it went over really well with the crowd, or it went over really well with the crowd that was still there at that point. I don't know necessarily if because at 5 a.m. people enjoyed that, if it means, oh, we should show more films like that. I don't know that's a direct correlation between those two.
Yeah.
Which, again, is not saying you'd never show that again. I personally think, you know, Abrams Star Trek films are kind of crappy. Yeah. But, again, that's my job to try to look beyond that, to say... But
your job is to be smarter than the rest of the
My audience. Job is to be smarter than the rest of everybody.
She's
yeah.
clarifying that was what you said.
But Avatar. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Avatar is a weird case, though, because of that. And it had 10 years hype behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of a recent sci-fi or horror film on that level that would fit that. Yeah, you know, I mean,
Star Wars.
Mad Max to me is a good example. It wasn't a world-dominating hit, but Mad Max Fury Road was a fairly sizable. Number one, it was a sizable hit with audiences. But number two, bigger, it was a sizable critical hit and a word-of-mouth hit. And people kind of, that infiltrated itself into the pop culture and the consciousness.
Well, it came and went in the summer.
Yeah.
And then it got this awards buzz.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good, I'm not a huge fan of Mad Max Fury Road. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like certain aspects of it quite a lot.
Well, and when you think of Fury Road 2, mm-hmm. that's a great film because you could play that at any time.
Well,
we're going to play it last, but that is so relentless for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Avatar, say what we will about it. That's a long film that kind of goes into digressive passages and you know, has a lot more things going on.
Yeah.
So, but personal biases in general, I've had this talk with people before. Bruce and I have this talk sometimes. I rag on Bruce sometimes because, what was the story I tell? Oh, Dress to Kill. Dress to Kill at the 2010 Horror Marathon.
Yeah.
We were right near the end of the booking process and I said, why don't we show Dress to Kill? Because I had, at that point, it started coming around on Brian De Palma. Mm-hmm. I used to hate Brian De Palma when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I started coming around and thinking, wait, there's like some really interesting
stuff.
You
stopped and went, whoa, Mission to Mars is a good movie.
Now there's one. There's one. Oh, God.
You're
Mission
like, I'm not
Mars.
Coming around on that one, damn it.
Talk about trying not to show that in a marathon ever. I think there was some talk once. Maybe Jeff Frank suggested showing Mission to Mars. I don't know why.
The year it came out.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I would suggest everyone, you know, saying the personal bias gets in the way. It sounds like it's an attack, but it really isn't. It's just, that's
oh,
the
no,
way
no,
the
no,
world
no.
is.
No, no, no. No, no. Because we think about that all the time. Dress to Kill, when I said, Bruce, we should play this. And he says, I don't know. I don't like it. I said, wait, when was the last time you saw it? He says, at a press screening in 1980. I was like, well, yeah, you got to, you know, things might have changed over time. I hated Dress to Kill the first time I saw it. I loved it when we showed it at the marathon, and the crowd ate it up for the most part.
I'm not a big fan of Dress to Kill, but I can respect it for what it is. I would say that probably, would it be fair to say that personal bias, I think it's in the way more in choosing what films to show rather than what films
oh,
not
yeah,
to
yeah.
Show.
Well, definitely there are.
And then you just run out of space.
Yeah, yeah.
Or appropriate space.
Well, and here's what I like to think, too. Again, take the film that you kind of, you know, that you love ragging on, The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, because you didn't understand it. And that's okay. I get it. You only have like an eighth grade education. That does happen.
I'm not as smart as Joe Neff.
No. No. Well, if you are. But what can I say?
If you are. Like Einstein.
I will as...
Once Thomas Edison.
as anyone who knows me knows... knows me knows. As anybody knows my nose,
smart.
It's a massive.
You're like a child running around.
It's a massive proboscis.
Look over there.
Shiny
object.
I do have a soft spot not only for Italian horror, but for mildly surreal, transgressive, mildly erotic horror. The Hunger, for example. Now I know there are people who like The Hunger. It's some of the few who say, oh God, why are you showing The Hunger again? It's like The Hunger is a cult classic in a lot of ways. There are a lot of people, there are, you know, put your personal asides out, or put your personal opinions out, or bias. There we go. There are a lot of people who like The Hunger. Strange Color of Your Body's Tears.
Not very many.
Nobody likes that. Well, that's a weird case though too, because that was
the premiere.
We were looking for a premiere,
I mean,
and it was available. Now, did it help that was something
sounds
that was
like
kind of up my alley?
Life.
Sure. Yeah, pretty much.
She was available. She's available.
She was mysterious and erotic, and
then she showed up.
She didn't cost a whole lot, and then she disappointed the audience. And no, I will admit that I gravitate towards films like that. I think that there's still a. And go back to Tim again. This is, I think, what is interesting.
One more question.
Tim, years ago, when, sorry, Tim, if I'm embarrassing you, but you did ask about my supposed flatulence in this podcast.
Supposed.
When I brought back the horror marathon at Studio 35 back in 1999, Tim made a comment to me. He says, "Oh, this is really cool that you're taking it over, because the Drexel there was always a pressure to do more arty films at the Drexel marathons."
He said that to you.
Yeah. And
you said,
and you won't have
just
to.
Just you wait.
Yeah. And well, which is weird, because if you look at the Drexel Horror Marathon history, it's not like a pretentious art house marathon.
No.
It's never. Like it is now. The mix of the films at the marathon has almost never changed. You look back at Horror Number 2 between what we did last year, and with some differences because time has passed and there are more films. It's the same mix of classic stuff and obscure stuff and more noticeable stuff. I think sometimes when Tim gets into it, it's more like, are you going to show more slasher films?
Yeah.
But in terms of personal bias, in terms of programming it, there will always be part of you who you are in the programming. I don't want to say this in a self-aggrandizing way.
Why stop now?
No, but I, in my living with my own little genius that I have, that it's tough to get beyond. I have found, for me, and I think this is as a programmer too, but as a person, the older I get, the more open-minded I tend to get about a lot of films. You know, I'm willing to give anything its day in court, even if it's really crappy. Because to me, it's like, well, you don't know, maybe something will be okay. Terminator Genesis, I saw the Cleveland Sci-Fi Marathon. Mm-hmm. Is that Terminator or Terminator 2? No. But did I actually kind of enjoy that in some ways? Yeah, because... I thought, well, it's kind of interesting how they try to really screw around with the timeline and your assumptions about the role of Sarah Connor as a heroine and how filtered through the male gaze that was in the original films, even if she was still a great character. And I thought, well, that was kind of interesting. I'm kind of glad I saw that. Granted, for what amounted to a couple bucks in the grand marathon ticket scheme.
Yeah.
But as a programmer, I mean, I think I tend to be that way too, is like, well, let's give this a day in court, or this would be interesting to show. Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, when we booked that last year, literally the booking process went a little something like this. I read about it in Video Watchdog magazine. Thank you, Tim Lucas and Donna Lucas, who are Cincinnati's own, doing the Lord's work. I read about it, and I went online and saw a bootleg copy, yeah, because it hadn't been released legitimately yet. And then I ordered Arrow's Blu-ray and contacted Arrow and said, hey, do you have a DCP of this? Yeah, we do. Cool, let's show it. Because it's like, oh, most people haven't shown that. That's interesting. I don't know how it's going to do. Would I have said that 10 years before? Maybe not. Are my biases still going to be in there? Yeah, I mean, it's like a documentary. I hate people who say, oh, that documentary was biased. Every documentary is biased. The fact that you are cutting footage together and you are making choices about what to include and what not to, there is an inherent bias even on a small level.
Well, there's always a bias, but there's a difference between being biased and manipulative.
This is very true. This is very true. I try not to be too manipulative or overly manipulative, one of the two in this. Just manipulative on the right level.
You don't want to manipulate which way you want to go with that one?
Maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's always, you know, if Bruce had not been programming or Bruce had not been working on the sci-fi marathon the last 25 to 30 years, would some of the lineups have looked different? Sure. Absolutely. That's why
you can't escape it. It's
no, and well, and that's why too, and the crowd dictates that sometimes too. That's why the lineup in for the Chicago Horror Marathons is slightly different than the one for the Columbus ones, which is slightly different from the ones for the Philadelphia ones.
Yeah.
They're different audiences, they're different programmers, they're different people. You're always going to get that as part of that. I'll just say this to Dale. I try when I can, and I think Bruce does this too. We try not to let our personal biases get in front of something that would be good for the event.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've really run into too many films like that recently where there's something like, wow, I really hated that film, but the crowd would eat it up.
Yeah.
And we've consciously said, nope, not programming that because I hate it. In fact, I think we'd be more likely to say, yeah, let's program it because the crowd
Ooh,
will
it's
really...
a polarizing... Let's put it in there. That's right.
That's completely different. That's, yeah. Anyway.
The last question from Andy is... What, in your opinion, has been the biggest letdown in marathon history? And Joe has to answer with something other than the closing of the Drexel North.
Oh, my God.
Starship Troopers 2? Marathon. You want to go with that?
Marathon history.
The biggest letdown.
Let's break this one down. And I know someone out there listening is going to say, great, he's going to break a question down again. Get God. Is this guy a lawyer? Someday.
Ba-dum-bum.
Okay, here's. I'm assuming Andy is talking about biggest letdown.
Just your biggest letdown in marathon.
I'd have to answer this a couple ways because there's biggest letdown like, film.
Was a girl going to meet you at the marathon?
There's biggest letdown event. There, and see, that's the thing too. Is I have to frame this, and Kevin, maybe you can chime in on this too. I have to frame this in my marathon experience.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah.
I don't think you can speak for everybody.
No. I know there are things that happened at marathons before I was going that were probably very disappointing to people, like a guest that was not that great, or I won't name any names. I think you might know who I'm talking about. Although she seems to be very, very, very nice these days.
Patty Mullen?
Yeah.
Dude, she had her tits practically hanging out, and I was a teenager. It was perfect.
There were some people who were disappointed by her appearance.
I was not.
Okay, well, you're the audience we need to cultivate. Andy's out there saying, get to the question!
Nice,
no, obviously,
nice
good night, everybody! Marathon chat, we're out.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Andy, let me answer this in a few ways, and I am not allowed to say the closing of the Drexel North. Am I allowed to say my split with Studio 35?
Yes, you can say that. You're like asking, okay. the question is the question. What is your...
Okay. I'm going to give a few answers because Andy's not here and I want to cover this as well as I can.
Biggest.
Okay. Yeah, but that could be defined in several different ways.
Oh my God.
Define biggest.
It depends on what the meaning of the word is.
What is the late Phil Hartman's impersonation of Bill Clinton and Paula Jones, where he says, Paula Jones says, I have a small penis. Well, let me tell you this. I do not have a small penis. Paula Jones has a big mouth. He was supposedly not allowed to come to a White House dinner because he made that joke.
Nice.
God bless that man. So, Andy, in a couple ways. In terms of event, my biggest disappointment in my time was my split with Studio 35, easily. And that was because I feel like that was my first stab at trying to build something for the marathons. And we had built it up to the George Romero year in 2003. And because I feuded with the owners at that time, it made the process of putting on that actual event more painful than it should have been. And then subsequently, I kind of figured I wasn't going to do business with them anymore. But when it finally went through, it felt really ridiculous because I felt like I had put a lot of my heart and soul and effort into building this thing. And I had kind of been told, well, you don't really matter. It's really about the event itself. It's not about you. What we can do this just as well as you can. Yeah. Now, that was tempered by the fact that Bruce then said, hey, we should really do an all-nighter this fall.
Yay!
And they learned, and the previous owners learned the biggest lesson in the world, which is don't fuck with the real marathon because we know what we know. We know is our nose. So event-wise, that was that. I mean, many, many less things over the years have disappointed me. I could give one broad answer to disappointing thing in marathon history. And it's stock.
Getting roped into doing these every now.
Oh, God. Getting roped into doing two marathons a year. It's what sci-fi went through for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And how it kind of started. Again, I hate to say this because it makes it sound like, well, Bruce and I are really just commanders of the universe today.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of reasons, when it went through the Arena Grand and the Gateway and then back to the Drexel, sci-fi became kind of rickety, and it hurt in some ways. That'll sound melodramatic, but yeah. The marathons changed my life so much, and I will always have a connection to them. So even though I wasn't involved, seeing sci-fi kind of go back and forth could be rough sometimes. Now, micro level, biggest disappointment of a film in marathon history that I think of.
Yeah.
Is a really, really tough one because premieres, for example. Premieres, I have to go back and think about who I was. 20 years ago, a premiere I got really excited for might be way more disappointing than today. Because today I might think, oh, I have no idea what this film's going to be like. I hope it's good.
Yeah.
You know, High Rise, I'm very, very excited for. It would have to be a complete disaster of epic proportions, and the crowd would have to lynch me up for it to be like a really, really, really disappointing moment.
You know what you have to do, crowd.
You've been given the orders. The post-hypnotic suggestion is Asiago.
That's a little cheesy.
Yeah. Hey!
Oh, zing!
So, biggest disappointment, film. I remember when Kronos premiered at the 1993 Horror Marathon, my first one. And I was a little disappointed by it back then, only because...
You weren't smart enough.
I wasn't smart enough, truly. They said Mexican vampires, and I thought Abel Ferrara. Yeah. Where's the Abel Ferrara? And it played at midnight, and I thought, oh, that probably should have played a little bit earlier because it's way more deliberate.
Yeah.
Man, that's a really tough question when you get to, like, film, like, biggest disappointment. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, some people will say MST3K, the movie, not appearing, but that's a completely different story we've told already involving Kevin Carr and the internet.
Well, I was actually, that if I were to say my own personal history was the fact that MST3K was advertised and then not shown. And
I think that has to be the biggest disappointment in marathon history, film-wise, of that not showing up. I didn't care back then. The only thing I cared about was, oh, I hope the event still happens.
Yeah.
But, like, I wasn't that much into MST that I thought, oh, my God, if this doesn't show up, I'm going to hang myself.
I was totally into MST.
Yeah, man, just on the spot, I'd have to sit down and think about this, but movies over the years that have been really disappointing. It's tough, too, because movies that are disappointing in the moment, so many factors can go into that. Hardware. Okay, all you Hardware fans out there, I went back this week and watched Hardware on Netflix, Wide Awake, and enjoyed it infinitely more than I enjoyed it last year at Sci-Fi. I wasn't watching it tired, smack dab in the middle of the end of the event, in between some fairly goofy, enjoyable films. And I thought, oh, this is actually, you know, it's pretty decent. I stylistically, I think it's an often beautiful film.
Agree to disagree.
Sure. Well, sure. Well, yeah, of course. Well, that's Richard Stanley. That's all of his stuff is agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Past that, you know, most of the premieres we've gotten over the years have been either at least good or serviceable or surprising in that they're way better than we thought. I'm trying to think of maybe horror because I've had more direct planning behind that, but disappointing film for horror, maybe... I can't think of anything.
See,
and again, this makes me think like everything I've programmed has been great. Please.
Well, I would say that in general, I'd say I learned very early on when they started doing premieres, like in the 90s.
Yeah.
When those became really big.
Yeah.
And it was a year they showed like The Ambulance and stuff like that. And there were like two or three premieres, and they had shown like Jacob's Ladder one year, which was a great
1990,
premiere.
Yeah.
And then the next year they had like three of them and they were all kind of sucky. And it like Frankenstein Unbound was a premiere once. And I learned that right at the beginning after Jacob's Ladder being such a great premiere and oh wow. And they showed The Dark Half. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other premieres were disappointments. And then I just learned to temper my expectations for premieres.
Yeah. Yeah. And premieres, you try to get good premieres, but the quality can vary wildly sometimes depending on what you have.
But I will say, if I were to say my biggest disappointment in the marathon was the marathon, the year that...
we made contact?
No, it was, what was it? 2000, was it 2013 or so? When was it? That they were going to show Zardoz. And
oh my God.
The Fly, whatever year that was.
Oh,
because I remember going to a press screening. I'll tell you, I don't think I told the story, but I went to a press screening and I cornered the marathon organizers, we'll say.
Bill, I think his name is.
Yeah. I was like,
Frank Drebin?
Yes, Frank Drebin. I asked him when his, you know, when they're going to do it and are they going to actually have it? I hadn't heard an announcement. He gave me a date, and literally the next day, I came home and I saw the announcement, and it was already for a different date. And they booked all the movies, and they pulled them from the lineup, and they kept shifting them and just kept shifting and shifting and shifting. And at that time, I was bringing my kids. I brought my son, Liam.
I remember this year now.
These 2 years, to 2 years, and he loved it. He absolutely loved it. And I said to him, I go, I'm not going to spend the money to take all of you guys to this because it looks like it's going to be awful. And that was a year that they didn't have any 35 and they were just showing stuff on DCP. And it just, I didn't go. I actually left. I said, I'm going to program my own marathon and I did my own marathon with
okay.
the kids.
I'll agree with you then.
Yeah.
I left the marathon early that year.
Yeah.
I almost didn't go to the marathon that year because I was at the tail end of a long string of disappointment with how sci-fi was going. Not Bruce's fault, just so everybody knows. And 2013, in the limited capacity that Mr. Zucchini and I were working behind the scenes, we were doing web promotion. And at a certain point, when we were told to promote certain films, and certain films then within 30 hours, I believe it was, did not show up, we became kind of apoplectic and threw our hands in the air and said, well, we're done. We're not doing anything else because we felt like even the small amount of energy we were investing in the event at that point was being wasted. Again, not by Bruce, just so you know. He was in much the same bandwagon. A bandwagon on a boat. That marathon, I almost did not go to. I watched 2001.
Mm-hmm.
The first premiere was Time of the Robots, and I almost left during that because I thought, this looks horrible. This is like something I could make on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's the first time in marathon history I'd said that about a film. I'm not a filmmaker, by the way. Safety Not Guaranteed played next, and I had just seen that in Boston about a month before.
Yeah.
And I liked that film a lot, but I got up and I was on my way out because I said, there's too much of a bad taste of what's gone on. And I came back in and talked with some people and didn't end up leaving. Stayed for Inception and stayed for Vanishing Waves, ultimately, which was really the one film in the lineup I wanted to see.
Yeah.
And then the Ship of Monsters thing happened, and we watched Vanishing Waves, but we left after that. Only the second marathon ever that I had left early intentionally, saying, I can't take any more. And I walked out of that marathon thinking, I'm done with marathons in this town.
Well, yeah. Well, and little did you know. Part of the reason it was so disappointing wasn't just for me, but it was because I had taken my son Liam.
Yeah.
2 years in a row.
Liam won the costume contest in 2012.
Yeah, and we had gone to sci-fi. We had done the two sci-fi marathons. We had gone to the horror marathons. He had such a great time. He loved it so much. You could see where it was like it became a part of him. and having to tell him, go, this does not look like it's going to be good, and I'm not going to go. And seeing sort of him getting so disappointed is what brought me down. And then my son Ben, who was going to, it was going to be his first marathon. And I'm just like, I don't think we can go. I don't think it's going to be worth it, because it was like they just, the lineup just kept shifting. And I'm like, you can't even book the fly, for crying out loud.
It
you know?
Seemed dire
yeah.
at the time. And things changed. And the people we're working with now at the theater changed for the better. Obviously, I think the last, since we really consolidated things in late 2013, I think these lineups we've had are great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't just say that because I'm promoting it. I mean, that's the thing. When you promote an event, generally you want to kind of try to say, I believe in this lineup.
Yeah.
It's always nice to be, to not be able to say, well, I hate most of these films, but come watch them. Really, I'm sure you'll have a great time. We haven't had that problem since.
Yeah.
That was also, like we talked about, I think, before this podcast recording.
Yeah.
It was what was disappointing about Sci-Fi 2014 is I think we took a quantum leap beyond what we did in 2013 in terms of lineup.
Yeah.
But I think there was an effect, an after effect from the travails of 2013 that bled over into 2014. Yeah, that was a pretty cruddy year in general.
And I'm glad to see it bounce back. And like, there are things that I have personal bias against, things in this lineup and last year's lineup that just affect me only personally, but I don't have a problem with them, on principle.
Kevin was traumatized by a David Bowie impersonator when he was a child. So just know that when Man Who Fell to Earth is on. I will say, disappointing on a small level, when I finally saw Q, didn't realize that it was Michael Moriarty and David Carradine riffing off each other for 90 minutes. That was challenging.
Q is not.
That's my own fault, though.
VHS cover box.
Talk about personal bias. That's part of my personal bias. It's bad in that I will wait to see a movie at a marathon, and then sometimes I will program that movie at a marathon, having not seen it, and think, "Oh, this will be great. It's Q."
Little did he know.
Yeah. Sorry, Larry Cohen.
Final question.
Oh God, there's another one.
There's one more.
Oh,
final
God.
Question from Tim. That's okay. It'll be quick. Speaking of slashers, any chance?
We were right, like an hour ago.
Any chance of Halloween sequels showing at the Horror Marathon in 2017? And yes, Halloween 3 counts. Tom Atkins' mustache would be amazing on the big screen. It was amazing on the big screen in Night of the Creeps.
You are right. You are absolutely right. Last fall, I went back and ran through most of the Halloween series.
Yeah.
I stopped before part 5.
That was the wise choice.
I might pick that up again. So really, I ran through about half of the Halloween series. Well, I bought the box set a couple years ago.
Once you hit 6, it goes downhill fast.
I will always defend Rob Zombie's Halloween and Halloween 2, more than one.
Never.
One is a very imperfect movie, especially the evil redneck family.
His entire run's bad.
Here's what I know. Here's what I know. I knows my nose. First of all, I think it would be fun to show the original Halloween again someday.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a good print. I think there's a decent DCP out there now.
Okay.
I think that would be good if we could bring Carpenter in or someone from the film.
Yeah.
Just because that's so ubiquitous. Which is weird because we haven't shown Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think people would like to see Nightmare on Elm Street. But they might look at Halloween this close. They might look at Halloween as being overshowed. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, here's what I learned. Halloween 2 is a film that my appreciation for that has grown quite a bit over the years.
The original Halloween.
The original Halloween 2, I think, is a fairly underrated film. A lot of style to burn.
It's not bad.
Well, Tim and I've joked with him about it because Tim hates Italian horror films. And Halloween 2 is deeply indebted to Italian horror films.
Yeah.
The way it's shot, the way it's scored, all of that. Mm. I would love to see Halloween 3 at the Horror Marathon. It's just when, that's all.
Yeah.
Halloween 3 is one that I'm sure will show up at some point, if not this year, the next year.
Can we get Tom Atkins as a guest?
I don't know. Tom probably wants too much money.
Yeah, probably now.
What would be fun?
If I mansplain to him my contribution to making him famous again.
Tom,
adoration.
Tom, baby, I got this 12-year-old boy who wears a fake mustache. He likes to look like you. What do you think, Tom?
That sounds really bad. You may want to consider
you got
how
it,
you
baby.
Said that.
Now I sound like
that sounds
Troy
like
McClure.
Something that'll be read back to you in court someday.
I don't know Tom Atkins, no. Halloween 3 will show up, I'm sure. And either at a 24-hour or at a mini event or something like that. We thought last year one of my ideas about Chocorama was maybe to show Friday the 13th because it was the anniversary.
Yeah.
Didn't end up happening because it would have involved like a concept that we wanted to do that we couldn't quite make work out.
Whenever we have a marathon on Friday the 13th, you can show it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. But Halloween 3 definitely at some point. Maybe even part 2. But 3 still holds up. Yeah, it's a really fun movie.
All right, we better wrap this up because this short podcast that you thought was going to be has gone on.
I will have you folks out there know Kevin talked a lot more than me. I have nothing else to say.
Buy your tickets.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. The final plug for those of you who hung in through this whole thing.
How you're promoting
this weekend, March 5th, March 6th, 33 annual. 30.
Go home, Jonah. You drunk.
I wish. SF33, 33rd annual Ohio 24 hour science fiction marathon. This Saturday, March 5th, noon. Until Sunday, March 5th, 6th, damn it, noon.
It's literally right in front of you.
At the Drexel, 2254 East Main Street. Tickets are $40 in advance, $45 at the door if they're left by that point. You can buy them at the Drexel in Bexley, 2254 East Main Street, at the Laughing Ogre Comics, 4258 North High Street, or via PayPal at www.scifimarathon.com. Like us on Facebook. Check us out at Ohio Marathons on Twitter. Mock us on Instagram because we're not on there yet. Should be a great time. I can't wait for this weekend. I am so tired from doing this podcast. I might sleep the next 4 days.
Yeah, it works. That's it for this time. Bye bye.